What's up? Welcome back to Season 3 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and with me today, I have my co-host, Janelle Wheeler.
Hey, everybody!
And Matthew Aguilar.
What up?
And today we're joined by comic book staffer Charlie Ridgely, affectionately known on this show as Turn Up Charlie.
What's going on?
That's the best nickname in all of comic book, I think.
Yeah, I think it is.
I'll take it.
Turn Up Charlie. Yeah, Turn Up Charlie's a great one. We've turned out some classics, but that it's one and it fits the personality of what Charlie Ridgely kind of brings to the show. So today is also kind of a special day. It's kind of a milestone day if you guys are longtime fans of Comic Book Nation. We're proud to announce that in addition to being able to download this podcast on your favorite platforms or watch it on your favorite platforms live with us on Twitch or Facebook or YouTube or watch it later if you don't have the time live, we, courtesy of ET Live, will be also streaming Comic Book Nation on the excellent Paramount Plus streaming network, where you can get a mountain of entertainment every Saturday night.
Let's go! Hello, Paramount fans!
So, a few things to get out of the way, just kind of for our longtime fans of the show. This means we got to clean up this act a little bit. We got to class this place up a little bit because, yeah, people who are going to be streaming this show and watching it, we want to make sure we can deliver for everybody and not make anybody feel excluded. So we're going to class this joint up a little bit. So forget everything you knew about the past of Comic Book Nation. We are starting fresh today with our new classier approach. That's it. Bravo. We have a lot to talk about today. There's some exciting stuff. There's a new James Bond movie out in theaters, No Time to Die. So we're going to give you a quick check-in on what you can expect from that. We're also going to talk about the finale of Marvel's What If and the new series they just announced, a WandaVision spinoff about Catherine Hahn's Agatha Harkness. After the break, we're going to come back and talk about Netflix's biggest hit show to date, Squid Game, and what is going on with that and what it's all about. We have some real feels to get into. Me and Charlie Ridgely were getting emotional about Squid Game before this, and so we got a lot to say about this show. We're going to break it down for you guys about what it's all about and if you should be watching. Plus, this is Comic Book Nation, so we are going to actually talk about comic books, which is something that regularly happens on the show if you are just joining us. Let's get into it right from the top. We want to start off with our review of the new James Bond movie, No Time to Die. James Bond has been out of theaters for quite some time. The last time we saw him was in 2015 with Spectre, or Spectre as they tried to call that movie, that woefully misspelled title. But James Bond, Daniel Craig, is back, and this will be his last outing as James Bond. And it is directed by the director of the maker of True Detective, Corey Fukunaga. I hope I said his name right, Charlie. I know you know names. Did I get that one right?
It sounded good,
right? Confident. Yeah, that's how we do. But yes, it is. Bottom line, this is a good kind of full circle return to form, I think, for the James Bond franchise. I think No Time to Die kind of falls on the side of the line because Craig's run has been a mixed bag, where people tend to kind of like Casino Royale and Skyfall. They're a little bit more critical of Quantum of Solace and Spectre. So this is like, what, his fifth? And so, like, where do we land? And I think this one, he ends landing on the right side of the fence, more towards kind of Casino Royale and Skyfall.
Every other one.
That's probably.
Yes, like every other one,
good,
right?
Good, bad, good.
Who cares? Every other one. Every other one is just for the paycheck. But yeah, so it actually falls on the right side of the line. There's more about No Time to Die that it gets right than it gets wrong. That's not to say the film is perfect. I think it's overly long. It is like a 2 hour plus Bond movie, which is typical for Bond, but this one feels
like 2:43 or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, I didn't want to scare people, but it is closer to the 3 mark and it feels like that. So there is that to consider. Yeah. I had to do this last night and it was hard, but not to say the cast doesn't do great and the action isn't great. And this new director, the guy who did True Detective, isn't great. The sequences are fun. There's a lot of classic Bond staples and it's a fun crowd pleaser blockbuster movie, but it is a little bit long. There are some elements that are it is a little bit bloated in the cast in the sense that not everybody feels like they get equal weight of time. The villains and some of the side characters that a lot of people may be excited to see in this one aren't maybe in the movie as much as you might think. Mm-hmm. A lot of this is kind of like a mystery, but it doesn't really feel like it's a mystery that ever pays off with a mystery, which I think might be a larger criticism of the Daniel Craig James Bond movies as a whole. There was always this thing like, oh, who's behind the scenes and who's this master pulling the string? And this one kind of thuds on delivering a villain. Rami Malek is creepy, is why they hired him to be. But his villain isn't one of the more interesting Bond villains that we're ever going to see. So, I mean, there's a henchman who just has a cybernetic eye who's more interesting than the main villain. You know what I mean?
Oof.
That's wow.
And that's not to take away from Rami Malek, because the scenes he is in, he's really creepy and he's like really a Bond classic villain, but just the concept of who he is isn't the most exciting. But the
that's kind of what plagued Spectre too.
Yeah.
Christoph Waltz is awesome, but Blofeld, this new era Blofeld, was really lackluster and really, you know, disappointing.
And the weird thing is, Blofeld has a better kind of Hannibal Lecter style scene in this movie for like 5 minutes tops of Christoph Waltz that's better than Spectre. And so you're like, well, at least he redeemed this thing. But they do bring Craig's run to a close. There's a lot of full circle stuff. It's good. And the future of Bond still looks like it's intact and exciting. So, you know, if you're thinking about No Time to Die, this is a good movie if you've been missing classic blockbuster and you love Bond, kind of to get you back out to theaters if you want to see it. But if you're just kind of, you know, Bond falls in the middle of action things with John Wick and Bourne now for you, and it's not special. You could stay on the wait. It's not.
How is Lashana?
Oh, Lashana Lynch, who was in Captain Marvel, is excellent in this as the new 007. There are a few people I think could hang with somebody like Daniel Craig, who is very suave and witty and very snappy as Bond, but she really does a great job in this. And like, I would watch an entire series about her, like as a spinoff and that whole thing, because she is really excellent. And I mean, there are some ways in which you were just like, whoa, sometimes where she is a real 007 and, you know, in the truest sense, she's not like Bond. Like everybody's got to, he's got to have that nice charm. She's a real 007. And
she's the main reason I'm excited for this movie.
Yeah. So she's good. Yeah. No, she's good. Ana de Armas is great. In her scene as her, as Paloma is such a scene stealer. You get like Jeffrey Wright back. There's people in here and they're all good. But to balance everybody there, like I said, you fall short and there's things you'd be like, oh, I wish I had more of this or missed more of that. But all in all, No Time to Die is a pretty good, pretty solid, good Bond film and a good end for Daniel Craig. So applause to everybody who made that. And good job, Daniel Craig. I will miss this Bond. All right. So that's that. Let's talk about something we can all share in now because I've talked too long. What If? What did you guys think of this finale? And now that we're at the end of What If Season 1, do you guys feel this was really relevant Marvel MCU viewing? Janelle, let's start with you, please.
Oh gosh. Okay. I'm always scared to go first when Charlie's here. I usually follow Charlie's lead on these. Okay. I have to say this for anyone who's new listening. My motto is more content. And so for me, like the more the merrier. I'm really happy most of the time. I really, really like things for the most part. Like think of me as Paula out of the judges of everything. And I love everything. So I just have to put that out there. Also, my favorite hero is Doctor Strange. This is Doctor Strange heavy episode. Therefore, I adore it.
No kidding, man.
Dude, he's such a rock star in this. And I love it. It's like everything that I've ever wanted from Strange. I mean, even like this bad, kind of like the bad side of him, the evil side of him. But he still comes through as like this glorious hero that I just love, and he sacrifices like everything in the end because he lost everything. Anyways, I'm not trying to spoil. Loved the episode, loved the show. I have said this time and time again, I'm not a big animation fan. It's not, I don't watch anime and I don't really enjoy animated things, but I really enjoyed this. I don't know if it's because of the style was a little bit more comic booky. But I just really liked it. I liked it a lot. It gets a really high mark for me. I'm going to rewatch the whole thing. I haven't rewatched WandaVision. I haven't rewatched Loki. I'm going to rewatch this. It's easy to watch and I like it a lot.
Way to punctuate the end there.
A lot.
All right. Now, Charlie, I guess go for it.
I thought it was okay. You know, What If as a whole, I thought was okay. Like, the finale was fine. The Doctor Strange solo episode was incredible. I thought, like, it got really dark. It was really intense. Like, it's really, really well written. I loved the zombies episode. It really took Marvel in a new direction. And the T'Challa Starlet episode was really fun. Everything else kind of missed for me. Like, I didn't dislike it. But it all felt really lackluster. You know, this Ultron, they tried to make really scary, and he was, but it just kind of, I don't know, it all fell apart when the Watcher was like, oh, I got to, he like panicked. It just, it was a very weird finale.
How did he sound? What was his?
It was a very, it felt like really a letdown. It was weird that we didn't get, I know that it was a COVID thing, but we didn't get the Gamora episode, and she just kind of showed up without her intro. I could take or leave most of What If. It just kind of, it felt like an extra thing that was fun to pass the time till we get to Eternals and Hawkeye, but like, now it's over and we can focus on like Chloe Zhao and a one-eyed pizza dog, and that's just way more important.
Let me ask, as we go into you, Matt, let me ask, because this, what Charlie's saying, feeds into my larger question. Do you consider this What If essential MCU viewing, and do you think there will be larger payoff from this animated series in, say, the movies or the live action series that could come up later and make this even more kind of essential?
So do I consider it essential viewing? No, I don't see this as essential viewing. Do I also, though, feel that it will have some sort of ramifications on things? Yes. But, you know, we've seen that with like the other Disney Plus shows, right? Like, they all have some effect, and in some cases larger effects. But, you know, I wouldn't call Falcon Winter Soldier necessary viewing, but like, it has major effects. Like, if you want to know, like, from point A to point B, yes. But as a whole, that show disappointed the hell out of me. So like, I'm kind of like this. Like, I actually really liked this last episode. And it was one of those things where I was like, man, I wish this whole show had been paced differently. And like, the way they threaded like, it should not have taken to the series, like the season finale, to get this. Like, I don't know what the difference would have been, whether you just like make longer episodes or you just maybe thread the story differently.
Introduce Ultron earlier.
But like, and I didn't care about Vision Ultron like at all. Okay. Like, I was more interested in like the back and forth and the exchanges between the characters. Like, that's the fun part. And that's like half the best part of this episode, is just seeing them all play off each other. So I wanted that, but I wanted that like from season, like episode one. Like, I wanted all that throughout the whole season. Instead, it was like dangling this carrot in the entire time. And I have
to get through this slog. So it's not.
I have to get through this slog of stuff and twists that go nowhere. And then finally at the end, like, hey, here you go. And it lasts for an episode. And the episode's really cool. You know, but like,
it was this whole payoff with Pepper and Shuri that was going to be so right. Cool.
Oh my God, and I forgot about that.
3 seconds right and they out. Were gone.
Right, pull the rug out from under them and like, really? Like,
oh, what that moment in the trailer for the back half of the season was so cool. I'm like, oh, I want to see that. And yeah, it sucked that so much of this episode hinged on Killmonger, who was like my least favorite main okay. character.
We're getting too far into the trees.
Weird.
It all, look, far in the trees. We're not discussing
point,
the episode.
It fed into my point, yeah, which was, I don't consider it essential viewing. I think it will have ramifications later.
I got to respectfully disagree with you guys. I disagree with what you're saying. I don't. You guys are kind of saying like Falcon and the Winter Soldier, for example, is non-essential viewing, but I don't agree with that. I
did not say that at all.
I don't agree with that at all. I don't think you show up to Captain America 4 and be like, wait, what? Like, if you don't
watch Falcon, because no one Winter can Soldier. Put together that he was given the shield at the end of Endgame and he became Captain America.
Right. No one can put that together. That's, yes, that I mean, we could always say that, but exactly. Like,
Beth, who needs nuance, Matt? Who needs that?
You, again, you asked the you're talking about two different things, though. You're not saying, I said, is it essential viewing? No. Nuance and context, yes. If you want that, go watch it.
Is but it essential to the MCU?
Point A to point B together without that show, because that show was heavily flawed.
I think that the road for a new Captain America to become the new Captain America is as essential as the road to watching the first Captain America become the first Captain America. I consider both of those to be kind of essential origin stories, no matter if I know. if the first guy would show up and have a shield, I'd be like, I know he's going to have the shield and suit.
They should have been, but the show should have been better.
Okay, that's a separate. That's a separate.
Well, you're going off the question, so no, I'm but just the, joining
the,
you there.
Yeah. But the question of essential means, like, do you need to know the narrative things that happen and character arcs that happen here?
Well, to whether be determined, right?
Whether they were executed perfectly. I mean, I don't think in some cases it's an open book mystery. I think you need to know what happened in Loki and have had to watch that really have a, because that was really just a primer for us to start saying Marvel multiverse and what that meant and what all in that
entails. I agree. Like, I feel like Loki is essential.
And I don't think you could understand a single thing in What if you have not seen Loki, like, and what that's all about. I think it would really be kind of throwing you for a loop, being like, what is happening here? So I don't agree that they're not essential. I think they are kind of essential. What if is a kind of, like I said, I mean, I asked the question because obviously I feel there is a question here, but I think there are going to be some things that are surprising about What if. I think Marvel might kind of invest in the importance of this series a little more than we think, because there are certain things that are now just sitting out there, right? Like Toby Jones and Michael B. Jordan can come back to this franchise in a way that has now been kind of set up as a different kind of Killmonger, a different kind of Arnim Zola. You know, we've been talking about Doctor Strange Supreme as a character we could very easily meet in the Multiverse of Madness, and suggests as much by the title of that film. I think this could turn out to be a little bit more essential. I actually thought the last two episodes of What If were good, but I kind of liked having this series in the same way I liked having the old comics, right? Like, they are just kind of throwaway. And I think Janelle touches on something that I think I would go back and watch this more than I would Loki, because a lot of this Marvel stuff feels like a soap opera. It's really exciting when you watch it and you're trying to see, you know, who's going to come back from the dead with an evil twin and all that. But like, once that happens, and a lot of these stories get kind of, they can be, not to say rewatching the films and stuff isn't great, but like, it can get muted in the enjoyment factor after you get the, like, the surprises, the post credits and all that stuff. See Venom too. But I would go back and watch this because I feel like this series was fun. And as I watched it, I would get kind of more details and fun out of it now that it's it's not on the Marvel schedule this week that I have to do. And I feel like I would go back to this more so than Loki or WandaVision or something else. But hey, that's just me.
Me too.
All right, let's talk about Agatha Harkness. How you guys feel about that? Catherine Hahn, she was a breakout star of WandaVision. And I will say, I think I've seen on the internet a lot of people saying, oh, Agatha is getting a show. Like, what? Like, you know, there's all the jokes about who also should get a show of low tier Marvel characters versus who's not getting a show. But if you did any of our reading about coverage of WandaVision or listened to the show during that time, I'm about to wreck my computer. Agatha Harkness is a very pivotal character in Marvel, and it's kind of a way to orient fans with a character they already like and can open doors to all kinds of different things. I mean, her influence on the mystical side of the Marvel universe is really profound. And she's also done small things like be the nanny for the Fantastic Four and their freaky mutant kid, you know, Franklin Richards, who can warp reality and do all that stuff. So there's a lot that they could do with this Agatha series. But what do you guys think? Because I think it's going to also be another surprise, because you hear it and you're like, but Catherine Hahn, who, if you ever know Catherine Hahn, who barely has like a computer or anything and doesn't get too wrapped up in all this, would be a perfect kind of Trojan horse for setting up a lot of this crazy stuff.
Good for her, by Marvel.
Yeah. Seriously.
Good for her that she doesn't.
But would be a good Trojan horse to set up a lot of some of this crazier stuff in a way that we never really expected, right? Maybe even some redemption for Ralph Boner in there.
Oh,
please. Personally, I coming from, you know, obviously I'm the newest comic book reader in the posse, but I can't say I'm a noob anymore because I've been like rapid fire for 2 years, like going crazy trying to catch up. And I will say, during that time of me studying, I have come to really enjoy Agatha whenever I see her. I first started kind of looking into her when it was, you know, when I was getting ready for WandaVision, and I think it's really cool. I think they did a great job of deciding to announce that she's getting her solo show as a witch from the Salem Witch Trials, like during spooky season, Halloween. And I think it will be cool. I really enjoyed her character. And for anyone who's like, I don't know if I like it, just rewind. Like, think about how much you were so pumped about Agatha, especially with like Agatha, oh, I'm not, like everybody was losing their minds when WandaVision was on and they loved her. And then obviously like the hype wore off and everyone's just kind of like, oh yeah, Agatha, I forget. But I think that this, she's going to do such a great job in this role. And again, more content, like I'm really excited to see it. And anything mystical, anything magic in the MCU is like totally up my alley. And I'm so pumped about it. She was part of the, was she a big role in the Fantastic Four?
Yeah, Agatha Harkness was actually introduced in the Fantastic Four in the 1970s, long before she ever made contact with Vision and Scarlet Witch and all that stuff. She right. was just the, she was the governess, which was basically like the nanny or caretaker. And she helped raise their son, who turned out to be an Omega level mutant who can change reality, kind of like Wanda. He's able to mess with reality and do all that stuff.
So he's not a mutant anymore.
Yeah, I know. They took that
Thank
away.
You, Dancelot.
Yeah, they took that away and changed all that. But for a long time, he was a mutant, and it's unclear how they'll play that in the MCU. But yeah, so, and it would be hilarious to know. And there's a lot of dramatic irony I could see with this series. And if you don't know what that means, it basically means that you could use the audience's knowledge to kind of play with things about who Agatha is and how nuts she is while setting her up as like a nanny job, right? And just seeing her do crazy stuff and then end up at like the Baxter Building. But, you know,
just make the nanny with Catherine Hahn's Agatha Harkness.
There it is. There's the idea.
That's right. There. That's the elevator pitch right there.
Format. Boom.
That's great.
Done.
That's the elevator pitch right there. And she uses magic to solve all her problems.
I dream of doing that. Look, or just bring Fran Drescher to the MCU. Either one is fine.
I will also be down for that.
if you're Marvel and you say, Catherine Hahn, would you do more stuff? And she says yes, you do anything that you can to keep her as long as possible because Catherine Hahn's incredible.
I agree.
And so no matter what happens in the show, we're going to get more Catherine Hahn as a witch. And that's just like objectively awesome.
Look at me and Charlie agreeing.
Yeah, look at that. Nice. Look at that.
Do it. It happens every so often. It's like a solar eclipse.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be, you know, February before we talk like that again.
Yeah, pretty much.
But so something Kobe mentioned that I really thought a lot about when this news broke is that I thought a lot about Nick Fury, and I don't think it's going to have the same kind of role. Yeah, I don't think Agatha's going to pull people together and do all this stuff. But the way that Nick Fury acted as connective tissue between things for a long time, you know, he's the one that met Iron Man. He's the one that brought Captain America. You know, like, he connected all the pieces. And I think that Agatha can really play a similar role in just providing connective tissue because she has such a deep history with magic. While Doctor Strange might know everything and now kind of Wanda knows everything, she's been doing it for hundreds of years. And so she understands the Darkhold. She understands, you know, where these things came from. And you see Marvel like going deeper with the mystical, with the dark stuff. You know, we have this new Doctor Strange movie. We have this spinoff now. Blade is coming. Like, Agatha provides a way to kind of piece some different things together and provide context to different things. And it just, I think it's a really smart move for a character that you could have done, like tried to fit things into a big screen, but you can just take Agatha and kind of space her out and give her room to explain different things and to talk about different topics and, you know, really explore that mystical side of Marvel that I think a lot of us have really wanted to see more of.
Yeah, and that's a good point. So we're going to see what this kind of show is and how it shapes up, because like Charlie just kind of broke down, it could be one that builds up another side of the Marvel Universe very quickly and deftly and helps us get into a lot of other exciting stuff. All right, we got an update to include something else to mention that, you know, we kind of forgot to mention, but it's pretty cool. So we have another Transformers movie coming. And we got a first look at the Transformers. So cue that up. Hello. Rich. Oh, Jim's here too.
Hi.
Oh, Jim. Wow.
Jim just popped in.
Yeah, I know. He's that was plug some, he's doing Transformers stuff.
Magic.
So, yes. So Stephen Cable Jr., the director for Rise of the Beasts, gave us our first look at Decepticons and the Autobots. But look, man,
that's the money one right there.
That's I mean, man, look at that Bumblebee. Like, that new Bumblebee looks incredible. I love the more G1 looking Optimus Prime.
That's Jazz, right?
Yeah. So that's Jazz. I don't know who the bug is. Yeah. But this is, look, I grew up a lifelong Beast Wars fan. Okay. Like, that was like my introduction to.
I don't think you could be a lifelong Beast Wars fan.
I mean,
I think you have to start off as a Transformers fan.
I am a diehard Beast Wars fan. Okay. Like, that is a thing where it is a show that, like I said, it introduced me to the Transformers. And what's interesting about this is that we're getting Optimus Prime, voiced by Peter Cullen, but we're also getting Optimus Primal, voiced by Ron Perlman, which is really, really cool. I've been watching that Transformers show that's on Netflix, where they're kind of bringing all that together. And I suspect this will just be a really cool live action, version of that. And
Watch the Rooster Teeth?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's going to be, I mean, Matt, you did some pre-press around this, like when they first announced it, right?
Yeah. Got to see the, I mean, he comes off as like, he's so enthusiastic. Like he loves Beast Wars as much.
Stephen Cable's like a massive, like mega fan.
Me and Jim do. So like it comes across like every time he's talking about it. So that's awesome just in itself. But yeah, got to see Optimus Primal's like bot mode. And that looks fantastic. I mean, that looks so good. Like if they continue that way, Rhinox is another one of my favorites.
I need to see Rhinox. I need to see all of the Cheetor. Yeah, all of them. I mean, look, this is the Transformers franchise has been a little rocky. But I like this with Bumblebee. When we got Bumblebee, I thought like, what a great, like Bumblebee is one of my favorite movies kind of period. Like I really like that movie. And so like having this connect to that, like having this movie take place in the 90s, I think is going to be a lot of fun, but.
Don't forget Anthony Ramos is starring in it.
Right.
And if y'all didn't see In the Heights, Anthony Ramos is just incredible. And so, I mean, him being in a blockbuster in and of itself is like super exciting to me, no matter what the blockbuster would be. The fact that it's Beast Wars is, like, double really cool.
Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, between him and Dominique Fishback, like I think we're in for a good ride on this one. So I needed any chance I get to nerd out about Beast Wars, I'm going to take. So I needed to do that. So thank you.
All right. Well, that's the first look at Transformers Rise of the Beast. Next exciting thing from that will be when we get that artwork or the actual shots of what our Beast Wars characters look like. I'm looking forward to that. And I don't know about you, but I am really looking forward to seeing Optimus Prime and Optimus Prime will throw down and have a little friendly disagreement. So that's going to be cool. All right. We're going to take a break. But when we get back, we got to break down Netflix's Squid Game, why this show is a hit and why you should be watching. I mean, I'm not even going to pretend it's going to be democratic about that. We're just going to tell you why you should be watching. So come on back. We're going to do that and talk comics. If you are just joining our show this time, or you caught us streaming on Paramount Plus, this is Comic Book Nation, and we will scare you with our midsection break return. Every single time in some cases, but that's the fun of the show. It's just one of the fun things we do. We like to freak each other out with our intro music. All right, now that we're back, let's talk about Netflix's Squid Game. Squid Game is the Korean language thriller that is, I mean, blowing up and is, I don't know if it's official yet or if it's, you know, really close to official that this is going to be Netflix's biggest hit yet, most viewed show. Charlie, you
wow.
are... Wow. Yeah,
Charlie's also, hold on. Let me sing your praises, man. Let me sing your praises. Charlie's also our streaming guru, so he knows like all things streaming and really tackles that part of the site for us. So, Charlie, where are we at with the ratings for Squid Game?
And Netflix hasn't officially like announced this is the biggest show we've ever had, but like based on metrics that a lot of the different sites and programs that are looking at who's viewing what, and even just looking at the Netflix top 10 thing that, you know, rotates every day. Squid Game's been number one since in the US since it came out. I mean, the last couple of weeks. And that's things, shows like that go up there all the time, you know, new shows, but like we've had a new new Mike Flanagan show debut since Squid Game came out, and Midnight Mass, as popular as Mike Flanagan stuff is on Netflix, was not able to take out Squid Game for the top spot. The Guilty with Jake Gyllenhaal was not.
I didn't remember that Squid Game came out before Midnight Mass.
I believe they were really close. I think it was a couple of days before. Like really I have to look. I think it was a day or two before.
Okay.
I could be wrong. I could be wrong.
Continue.
Because I caught the Squid Game train. Like I saw the name of it, and it took me a while to catch on to how popular it actually was. But like, I mean, Midnight Mass didn't take the top spot, you know, from Squid Game. The Guilty, the Jake Gyllenhaal movie, didn't take the top spot from Squid Game.
Charlie Ridgely is the streaming guru. He is correct. Squid Game came out September 17th, the day of my 10th anniversary, and Midnight Mass came out September 24th. That is crazy. So Squid Game, wow. Yeah, that's pretty
intense. And there was no press for it at all. People were discovering this wholly on their own. You know, because Midnight Mass, there was a lot of like push for, obviously, you know, it's a new Mike Flanagan show. Mike Flanagan has been an absolute hit maker for Netflix. I mean, both Hill House and Bly Manor were huge. Gerald's Game got a lot of praise, you know, non-Netflix, but Dr. Sleep was a pretty solid, you know, critical hit. And so everything he does for Netflix has been big. And then now he does this, and I think it's his best show yet. A lot of critics agree that it's his best show yet. And that was still not enough to outdo what Squid Game was doing.
Yeah.
It's and pretty exciting. Not only has it been that way in the US, I mean, I think the metric I read was like 90 different countries. It was number one at one point. I mean, it's so big because it's huge here, but like it's huge everywhere.
Yeah,
and there's not a country that's not watching this.
I don't think we've seen this from Netflix in a long time where a series just kind of organically just kind of rolled.
Stranger Things is really the only one I can, and we didn't have the top 10 then. We didn't have sites measuring metrics for streaming at that point. I mean, under the radar, but now there's so many streaming services that those things are really popular. Everyone wants to know who's streaming what. But like Stranger Things, if you remember, was not really heavily advertised.
No, not at first.
And people kind of started discovering it, and word of mouth caught on, and everyone was like, oh, you have to watch Stranger Things. And Squid Game has kind of become that, with the added, you know, benefit of that top 10 when you log on and say, oh, this is the most popular thing on this site right now. I should watch it. And that has really kind of snowballed. And I mean, I have friends who are not like entertainment connected. You know, a couple of friends that only talk to me, like they ask me about Marvel stuff, but that's really it. But I had multiple people text me, it's like, have you watched Squid Game? Do you know about Squid Game? What's going on with Squid Game? Like, everyone is talking about this show. And I think, I mean, we'll get into why. I think there's a lot of different factors to it, but I think part of it is I think a lot of audiences, especially American audiences, are not used to this kind of thing. This like death game subgenre situation is really new for a lot of people, and it's really kind of taken everybody by storm.
Yeah, this is like kind of people, like what Battle Royale did to us
Battle Royale.
Like 99, 2000, right around that turn, is like, I feel, or what the Hunger Games did for some young adults in like the 2010s, this is kind of now for adults, them discovering this. But this is this is a popular subgenre in Asian cinema, TV, stuff like that. It's been around for a long time, but this kind of death games. But Squid Game is one of the better ones I've seen, because I do love this genre ever since I saw Battle Royale. It's by Hwang Dong-hyuk.
Battle Royale is streaming for free on IMDb TV, just for anyone
Streaming. He's got all the streams.
Battle Royale is the best of this whole genre, of the whole death game situation. Like, if you're watching Squid Game and you're into it, Battle Royale is a must see. I mean, no offense to Squid Game, Battle Royale is the better version of it. Like, Battle Royale.
You always turn up a little too far. We're not going to go
there. Battle Royale is a cult classic for a reason. It's a classic, violent,
never awesome going to argue movie. With that. But let's just get back to Squid Game. To answer some things in the comments, because we do have live comments while we are live on Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook. And we want to let our audience know we hear you guys. Yes, you can watch Squid Game dubbed. It's really kind of sinister. I actually want to talk about that, because my wife and I both share a Netflix account, but we have two different profiles. And I feel like Netflix predicts, based on who you are and what you watch, which version you get. because she started Squid Game and it all under her profile, under her profile, and it automatically did the dubbed version for her. Cause she came to me and was like, wait, I thought you said this was like subtitled. And for me, it started in the, you know, the subtitle version. Cause I watch a lot of anime on Netflix and foreign films, and she doesn't, she very much just likes to just watch in English cause she's doing stuff. And so that was kind of funny, but you can watch it in two different ways and Netflix might choose for you. That's my point. So yes, that's that question. And some people have said, you know, are things we watched like last year also similar hits in like Tiger King and The Platform? And The Platform got to be big, but that was just a single movie, and series take on a different kind of phenomenon.
And The Platform peaked really pretty quickly.
Yeah, and then went. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I love Platform, but it was very...
Yeah, it was quick. And it was a quick, satisfying peak, but it was quick. And Tiger King, I know it was hugely popular in America. I'm not sure what the international appeal of all that was. I feel like it was very much Americana, more so than anything else. But yeah, no, this one is the first one we've seen that's rolled out kind of across the world. And just to get into what makes this really good is I think the kind of show creator Hwang Dong-hyuk has really... He's a filmmaker. If you've done any kind of research on him, first of all, he had to scrap really hard to get this thing made. I mean, he took it down to the last dollar and believed in this project to get it done and is reaping the well-deserved rewards. So, Money Heist. Money Heist would be the other big thing that kind of rolled out, that kind of did worldwide success like this. Money Heist kind of grew organically. He's made this series, and I think it's really good because it's very timely. And what Deathmatch kind of subgenre does is it uses the kind of both the fascination and the morbid fascination of seeing these games of chance and who will die and compete, and which is an extension of what we already like to watch, the schadenfreude of us like watching like Wipeout or all those other shows, game shows that are just about people getting hurt or slimed or falling.
The floor is lava. The floor is
lava. Frogger. And we love that kind of stuff. And even just like monster truck rallies, all that stuff, the morbid kind of curiosity if something could go wrong or somebody's going to get messed up or hurt or something like that. So it takes that and it marries it to real deep kind of themes about people and society and all that kind of stuff, both on the large macro, like I said, social, philosophical level, and the micro, who people are, kind of what makes us, what bonds us, what doesn't bond us, and all that kind of stuff. And this show really captures that. And per episode, it's a kind of perfect marriage of using games that we all could recognize from childhood and the kind of thrill, edge of your seat thrill of seeing who's going to survive these games. But also each episode takes its game and makes a very great metaphor about, like I said, something about society, people, or both. And each episode to episode is really effective. And Charlie and I were like focusing on the sixth episode today, which I'm not going to tell you anything about this because I think we say this is like at the heart, at the height of its popularity. And I was kind of arguing with Jim Viscardi about this the other day, but I think it's just now really getting to that wave where it's crashing through the water cooler and it's getting to, like Charlie and everybody else said, like mainstream people are beginning to like really jump into it. And that wave is still happening. So I'm not going to spoil anything, but the sixth episode is a perfect, like if I were to submit to an Emmys or something, like that would be the one that I selected.
Episode six is one of my favorite TV single episodes of the whole year.
Yeah.
You know? And I think you like Speed more than I do. I like it. I'm not over the moon about it, but I am like all in on episode six. I mean, it's a little bit of a bottle episode in a way. It's kind of one location ish, but it's the best writing of the show. It's some of the best writing I've seen on TV in a while. Like it's a really, really fascinating character study, and there are stakes that kind of get set up right away. Yeah. And you know that there's no chance of that changing. As I'm trying to work around not saying anything about episode six is so wonderfully put together. A really cool set design too, which the whole show is really awesome set design. But episode six is like the
Charlie peak of that show. Episode six. So
everyone, like when you look on IMDb, you look at the ratings.
No, it's a very good.
It's episode. Like a full point higher than everything else.
But I'm just saying it's the epitome of like everything that this show is doing right. Using this kind of childhood game, the stakes, the character stuff, and the larger societal thing. Like, you know, you're going to come away with episode six with mixed feelings about people in general. and so Half Sen Josh says, have your therapist on speed dial. Yes, that is very true. There are episodes of Squid Game that will break you emotionally. So.
Oh, yeah. And Kobe, you haven't. Now, you still have another episode or two to go, correct? Yeah,
well, yes. I'm coming to the end. And if, like any death match, like any death match story ever, once you get down to the end, you get down to the core characters. Yeah. Like it gets more real than that and it gets tragic. So yeah, Highlander rules, baby. That taught me about life. There can only be one. So there you go. But yeah, let's talk to Janelle and Matt real quick, because you guys are just now kind of, I'm throwing you into the Squid Game pool based on your obligations to the show. What are you guys thinking so far?
I mean, I'm so glad you did, but I jumped the gun, man. I don't even remember episode 6. I watched it so fast. I did not take any breaks. I didn't leave the couch. Like, I was just sucked
Episode
in.
6 was all marbles.
Yeah. Marbles. Okay, marble got episode. It. Yes. Oof. Love,
yeah.
love. Oh God, I'm so pumped. I feel like the biggest problem, because I'm telling my fiance to watch it now, is trying to decide, like Kofi said, if you should be watching it with subtitles or dubs. I have been kind of bouncing back and forth depending on how busy I am cooking dinner or something. Mm-hmm. I will say that the subtitles, I really like the subtitles better.
The dub is weird for this.
It's weird because you get certain like loss in translation things where like something that's supposed to be like flirty is also being referenced to somebody that's not flirty or something.
There's one character 212 where she keeps calling the one guy babe, but in the English she says old man.
Yes.
It's very
confusing. So that's like the one episode. Times
if you listen to the English dub and have the English subtitles, those don't match either.
Yeah.
It's if you can sit and focus on it,
if you can watch
the original language with the subtitles. It is much, much better. I mean,
it is.
Some people like it their own way. That's fine.
But you really should, like, even if you just watch like maybe the last episode with the subtitles, you really should just like experience at least one episode with the subtitles. But it felt very like It's a Small World after all for me, like throughout the whole thing. It is so aesthetically pleasing. Obviously, I want to spoil everything. Obviously.
Well, okay, Janelle, I want to ask you one question. No spoilers. Did you like the ending?
Just a yes or no?
Kind of.
Okay.
It's a no for me, dog. That's all I'm going to say. I did not love.
Yeah, I don't feel fulfilled.
We're going to be going.
There is definitely room for another season, though, which is good. Yes.
All right. And I hope that happens.
We're going to stop it there because I know Charlie, and I know when Charlie gets ramped up, we cannot.
That's why I asked and left it alone.
Yeah. We're going to stop there. We got to stop before we get ramped up because I know YouTube will go just over the top in spoilers. So we're going to stop it right there. But the consensus is all around. And I'm sorry, Matt, all you get is a yes or no. Should people watch Squid Game?
Sure.
Matt is indifferent. Boom. So there you have it.
Oh,
sure. From Matthew Aguilar. That is Netflix's Squid Game. Check that out. We are going to move on because we want to have enough time to talk comics this week. This is Comic Book Nation. And as such, we discuss comic books and hopefully let you guys know which ones you should be picking up and what's good to check out. And that is always our comics guru, Matthew Aguilar. What is out on stands this week?
What about people? So let's start with some Marvel. This is the relaunch. I don't know if everyone's kept up with the Spider-Man saga lately, but Nick Spencer's run has kind of come to its natural conclusion. And now we are starting the thrice monthly Amazing Spider-Man run, which has a kind of like what they did a few years ago, where they kind of combined some of their most popular writers. Here we have three of their more popular writers, and they're kind of tackling this ongoing story. By the way, full spoilers for comics incoming. So if you have not read those, shy your eyes, your ears, everything. But this brings back, I think Kofi's a big Ben Reilly fan, if I'm not mistaken. Are you?
I think I'm one of the biggest stumpers for both Ben Reilly and the Clone Saga of the 90s here. I think okay, on the comic book staff. Yeah, I feel like I have to hold my own on that a lot, but like, yes.
Ben Reilly has the best Spider-Man design of all time.
Dude, I'll Scarlet Spider design, yes, is like one of the
best. Yeah, I mean, that's just the 90s right ever. There, man. Like, that is the 90s right there. Scarlet Spider's with the hoodie, sweatshirt. Yeah, man. That's
now,
great stuff.
So this, of course, brings us to one of the more interesting wrinkles here. So if it's one of those things, this tries to kind of streamline and take cherry pick the most interesting elements over the last 3 years of Spider-Man stories and kind of give you a fresh place to take off. So, you know, if you didn't see like all the Ben Reilly kind of, you know, trying to clone people and all that from before, you might be a little, a little hazy, but they do a good enough job of filling in some of the details. But he's back. He's kind of got this new lease on life.
Nobody can untangle the cloning in Spider-Man.
Yeah. It's a lot. And not even that one. The second one. Like the next one when he came back and like people thought it was the Jackal, but it wasn't. And he had the mask and he was kind of like all that stuff. So they reference some of that in here. Also, we get like Slott's Superior Spider-Man and like some of that stuff. And like Parker had Parker Industries and all that. There's a lot in here, but I think they do a good enough job of, even if you haven't read all that, give you enough of the pieces to kind of pick up. But I just think it's actually brilliant that when he sold the company, when Doc Ock, and this is such a comic-y explanation, when Doc Ock was in control of his body, he filed copyright and trademarks on the Spider-Man name. So and Peter didn't realize that. So when he sold the company for like whatever it was worth at the end, he didn't realize he also sold the title of Spider-Man, like the legal title of Spider-Man, which means now he can't legally, like for branding and stuff, be Spider-Man. Ben Reilly is now working with the company that owns that. And so like, if you're looking at it, Ben Reilly is the actual Spider-Man by name. I think that's just like brilliant. Such a small little weird thing to kind of grasp onto, but I think it's great. I think it's really interesting. And then we get a lot of like core Spider-Man stuff, Peter and MJ, and they're kind of him refusing to deal with a lot of the trauma that's happened over the last few years, Ben and trying to explore this whole new life of his that he can actually be out in the open and people know him as a hero. There's a lot of core Spider-Man stuff here. I dug it overall. There's a couple different stories, but I actually ended up liking most of them, even though if I didn't love the art on every single one, I liked the whole thing. So I came away actually pretty more enthused about a Spidey story than I had been in a minute. Danelle, I know this is kind of, I don't know how deep you've gone into Spidey lore and stuff. So what did you feel about this?
Yeah, I don't really, Spider-Man's not one of my like go-to storylines that I read on. And yes, you are correct. I was a little confused with Ben. I didn't know who Ben was or what that was about. But I mean, as long as you read the little intro paragraph, got it. You kind of understand what's happening when they do bring in Ben. I had a moment like, is he hallucinating? Is this thing not real? And then finally, like, it was established pretty quickly. I think they did a good job, especially for newbies coming in. I think you can definitely get into this book, read it, understand what's going on, be intrigued by the story, and want to continue. I mean, I do feel enthused about this book for sure. And the art was great. Yeah.
Boy, the art on that first story is so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. Kofi, what do you think?
I have not finished this one yet. I'm playing catch up on a lot of Spider-Man stuff because I could not like jump into this. I started and I was like, all right, I need to know what happened with all the Kindred stuff. Like, I got to get back. So I'm actually going backwards and I'm like going through the last few issues of Amazing Spider-Man. So I'm catching up, but yeah, I could tell you just off the bat, I'm hoping, like, just having seen just the early part of this and just trying to put my head around all of it, like, I'm hoping that I'm glad that Ben Reilly is going to get a fresh kind of start out of all this, because I think Spider-Man needs something disconnected from whatever has been happening in like the last 5 years of Spider-Man, because it is so convoluted and like really hard to follow. It's just like one big cable origin. And it's just like, just trying to keep track of like what Spider-Man's been through, what Miles has been through, like what the Superior Spider-Man did, who are these other, like, you know, Spider-Man family people now, there's like 50 of them. And like all of this is in the Spider-Verse and like the spider totems and like all of this stuff is so.
Oh, you don't need to consider the do that to yourself. Do not consider the spider totems, even though I will always have a special place in my heart for the other. I actually love that series. But I know that not everybody shares that opinion, and I totally get it. It is a mess. But
I think that the Ben Reilly and the Spider-Man, whatever the new corporation is called, is actually a fresh start that I will be able to get behind and enjoy. So I'm kind of happy it's happening, because it feels like the first time I'm going to get a Spider-Man character I know and like, and not be so burdened by, I mean, it'll still be part of this larger crazy universe, but not so burdened by this, because I feel like I can't get through any of these. And I feel like every time we talk about Spider-Man storylines recently, we keep saying the same thing. It's like, I wish this series could just do a simple, like, point A to point B, like, here's what we're doing. Here's a quest, like Spider-Man journey, adventure, character story, as opposed to all this convoluted stuff we keep getting into. But
just like the movies.
Yeah, there you go. Just like, you know, so that's where I stand on
it's,
that.
Yeah. I think the creative team is up to that test. I'm a big...
Somebody said, Brywood says it needs a... Spider-Man needs a Hickman reboot.
Oh, I mean, it's not wrong. I do love that Zeb Wells, who writes Spider-Man really well, is part of this. I also love Kelly Thompson's work, as noted by everybody. So, like, having them involved in this, I feel like the tone of Spider-Man throughout this whole issue is perfect. Like, it's spot on. It feels like Spider-Man. Their whole back and forth of, like, Ben Reilly's suit is all souped up and like his is not, like all that back and forth stuff is really good. So I hope, by the way, I saw in the comments. So this is actually Amazing Spider-Man. This is actually kicks off Amazing Spider-Man 75. So they're not breaking up the numbering. They're just releasing Amazing Spider-Man three times a month. It's not like three different titles. So it's just that one. They also recently canceled, I think it's Nonstop Spider-Man. So like there's like currently like four Spidey books, but I think they canceled one to kind of make room for this. Wow. Just for any clarity purposes.
Is Salad and Ahmed still writing Miles?
Yeah. Yeah. Miles hasn't gone anywhere. Spider-Gwen still around.
Yeah. I mean,
to Kofi's point, there are a lot of Spider-Man level characters.
Because Miles also had a really big role in Champions too.
Yeah. Which got recently canceled.
Miles feels like classic Spider-Man stuff, like old school Peter Parker.
Well, it feels like that though, because it feels like that. I feel like, one, because Miles is a great character, but also it's like Ultimate Spider-Man felt for the first couple
you're
years.
You're getting to build
it. It's a simpler story too. Like we're talking about all the crazy stuff happening. Yeah. You know, and I mean, to his credit, Ahmed's a very, very good writer.
Right.
And that has a lot to do with it, but it's a very simple story to Miles as a teenager and a hero and how all the things in his life affect the other things.
Ultimate Spider-Man, it's
very to its roots.
Did the same thing eventually. Right. At some point, you just develop your own kind of, like, Miles is going to run into the same problem.
Yeah,
at some point in time.
It'll get too convoluted. I mean, he's already dealing with clones too. So,
right.
I mean,
like, right. It's already,
out the clones. It's getting
mess is inevitable.
Yes. Yeah. It's just about how you navigate it. So, yeah, I mean, but Spider-Man especially is probably one of the more messier characters now to this point, which is crazy because I should not be able to relate Spider-Man to Cable, but you're not wrong. So moving on to something completely different and keeping in the horror theme of Halloween, Soul Plumber, which I threw this book on to the CB Nation crew. And I did not, to be fair, I had not read it yet when I did that. So I just read the premise and was like, oh, this is DC horror. This would be fun. And then I read it and I went, oh, shnikes. this is something. So this book is about, this is number one. I think this is part of their Black Label.
This is DC horror.
Yeah, Black this Label. Is a very adult level book. So do not be giving this to the kiddos. Fair warning. It's about essentially kind of like they take this guy who's been looking for direction and kind of looking for the sign from God. And he tried to be in the clergy and that didn't work out and all these things.
Don't and then he call finds a guy. This is a like gross, like freakazoid.
Okay. Yes, this
like
is true.
A psychopath, scary dude.
Yeah,
he's a little...
I'm disappointed. He's like, I didn't get to read this.
You need to play the Deliverance theme, like
this
when you're reading this.
When Kofi sent me the doc for the show, the preview in Slack hadn't updated yet, so I read a bunch of comics that I guess y'all talked about a couple weeks ago.
Oh no!
So I was sitting here reading Darkhold and ready to talk about that weird mess.
You need to read this because I feel like you would. Well, I don't know if you'll like it. I feel like you would appreciate just how like off.
Oh, I'm sure. Just the way you're talking about it. I'm upset. I have not read it yet. That's the first thing to do when I get off of this.
It's this very creepy. Got lots of issues, guy. To be fair, not even that is too simplification, like too simple. But
no, I mean, this is very much in the kind of Harvey Pekar, Robert Crumb kind of vein of comics, underground comics, in the 70s and stuff. It's very much aping that style.
Yeah.
And I wanted to talk about this. I'm sorry, just to say, I wanted to talk about this also, and I'm going to kind of relate this to Midnight Mass because I believe these both do something very good.
Yeah.
But go for it. I'm sorry, Matt.
No. I see that correlation, though.
Yeah. I didn't watch Midnight Mass because I didn't want to, like, get on religious stuff. Like,
I'm sorry. And then I gave this book.
Girl, I was the wrong turn. Taken aback by this book. Bad.
So then essentially we get this kind of, like, con man televangelist character introduced who essentially says, hey, I have this machine and you can reach into the souls of people and take out the corruptness and then they're reborn. And it's like this giant ridiculous machine. And essentially he sells the blueprints, but then you kind of realize, oh, he's a con man. And like no one's ever built one. And he's just like selling it for money. Well, this one dude builds his own and like, it's just insane. Like the characters in this are so weird. They're like so off.
Does it connect to, like, I know DC put it out. Does it have connected tissue with DC at all?
This is its own story, very much its own universe. Yeah. And like I said, if you don't know what I mean when I say Harvey P. Carr and Robert Crumb and American Splendor and things like that, go look, because Crumb drew people with these very kind of dirty and exaggerated. He reflected a lot of the grime of humanity and stuff, while people like to draw perfect people in art. And this is very dirty, like we said. And this character, I mean, this guy looks like a candidate to be the Joker, right? And like any
if
other
it ends up being a Joker tie-in, I will not be happy.
No, it's not. Because it's a tragic comedy in a way, because he really is like very earnestly into religion. Like this is his thing, and everything he kind of reflects around his dirty, kind of grimy, messed up, psychotic life is reflected as a religion. Like he knows their side characters, like a crazy man on the street, you know, and all this other people, Scuzz, and like con artists and scumbag buddies he has. But he just sees this himself as like one of the Lord's chosen and going on. And the big twist at the end is, you know, throughout this con, he actually seems to reach in and pull out an actual demon spirit from somebody. And it's great because you don't know really like where the line of reality is here. Is this seeing something, or is he just crazy, or like what's going on here? But it does what Midnight Mass does, which is talk about, you know, not slam faith itself, but say how it can be used and skewed by people with ill intent to kind of mess with people and trick people, right? Mm-hmm. That's kind of the point of both. This one is different than any other comic I think I've ever read. And it is crazy, but I really want to see what happens next.
Right. Yeah, same. Absolutely. I gotta know. Like, is that a real demon or not?
I just pulled it up.
Yeah.
Very up my alley.
You look the cover, and the cover tells you what kind of feel that has.
Oh yeah, Charlie, you'll love this. But so I thought this was a crazy. I didn't know what Matt was throwing me into with this one, but it turned out there, because I'm liking kind of these DC Black labels, like this and The Nice House on the Lake. I think are
nice house
really promising signs that somebody over there in the adult section of DC is really doing a good job of like.
Get Joker has been good too. Like they're doing good stuff. Yeah. Like Black Label's doing. It's crazy because like Black. And by the way, hold on. Before we go any further, I have to address the just bombshell that Kofi threw last time of saying like DC has no great issues. That is not true.
Well, I'm saying no. I'm saying the last week. come on, Matt.
I heard that. I was like, what?
Everybody in the comments. Everybody watching this on Paramount Plus. Come on, DC at the end of the month, the last week of the month, is notorious for just dropping straight garbage. And just handing
true.
It to us and
being fifth like, week stuff.
See you at the beginning of next month. And it's just like,
it's true. But before we get into the next book, so everyone dug this. It seems like,
great Halloween vibes. Love it.
Okay. Good deal. So let's move into real quick. Arkham City, The Order of the World. Number one. I read this after I read Soul Plumber. And I think that was to the detriment of this book, because I enjoyed that. That book was so different and I enjoyed it so much. And then going into this, I just was like, meh. I was like, it was very much we're following up on A-Day. Of course, like Joker gassed everybody and
we don't find know out, Joker. Don't you blame Joker. You don't know that.
You find out that there was only one psychiatrist that was not in the building that worked for Arkham at the time. And so she comes back and she's helping the police try and recover the inmates that are still alive, because most of them died too. And it's a trick there. So the premise is interesting. This book just did not click for me, because you're going through and like the twist at the end was it. Like, I like that. I don't know if it hooked me. Like, I wouldn't read the next one. And that's how I felt personally, but that was me. What'd you guys feel?
I think Batman makers need to realize a couple things. One, A Day is never going to be M Day. Number one. Two, stop trying to put clown hunter stories in these books. That's just completely unrelated, but stop that. And this isn't as interesting. None of this stuff from kind of Fear State or A Day is interesting in and of itself. It's interesting of how it's transforming the Batman status quo. That's the interesting part, in my opinion. So this was just like, I also read this over their Soul Plumber, and I just was like, well, that was a talkie, you know, like there were people, they had conversations. It was like Soul Plumber is so kinetic, like in just like crackling with like energy and craziness. And this is just kind of like dry. It's just kind of dry. And it's just like, yeah, it didn't hook me in my interest that much. Not just me though.
Now, Janelle, I know you had a little Batman burnout a couple weeks ago.
I'm literally looking in our thread. I'm like, where is this? I don't see it.
I don't think you even wasted
my time. And I'm glad you didn't, because I really liked all the books this week. Fault. I liked Soul Plumber. I liked our Spider-Man. And then the next one we're going to talk about, I really enjoyed.
Let's get to that.
Wait, Briwood. I just want to answer Briwood. I think the Miracle Molly one shot was 10 times better than this Arkham City Order.
Yes, I did. I did read Miracle Molly, and I agree. Because Briwood has been on me to read that a couple times. Mm-hmm. My bad. But yes, that was way better. I would read another one of that as opposed to this. So me and Janelle have been on the Captain Marvel train. Captain Marvel number 33, Last of the Marvels chapter 2. And by the way, you can check out a full interview with Kelly Thompson all about the Last of the Marvels and a preview of what's to come on comicbook.com. Click. But what did you think of this issue? Because the last one left us with like a big cliffhanger and we get a lot of info here.
Oh gosh, I love this. It was just action packed, start to finish. Just had me just reading extremely quickly, like almost too fast. I was like, I probably need to go over this again. Just a lot of really awesome stuff going on. And I'm so pumped about where this is going, and I've got to know how the end, like how she's going to get out of this conundrum that she's in. And yeah, what do you think, Matt? Tell me.
That cliffhanger. My God.
Oh yeah.
Oh, man, that's the way you write like an end of book hook there. I was like, it just ends in silence. I was like, oh my God.
Yes. The whole thing felt like a movie. Like I was like, this is an action movie. I mean, it was just from go, like action. Yeah. I haven't really read any books like that in a long time that are just like action, action, action. Like, let's just keep going with like fighting and grooving. Yeah. Like there's no wordiness or anything. Yeah, it was great.
With Cap, it's kind of like every other arc. So like the last Avenger that kind of set this one up was kind of that way too. It was like this kind of boom, action, we're moving through, and it was very, very much kind of the action heavy thing. And then the next arc was kind of the Doctor Strange stuff. And then you're kind of like, or like Brave New World, actually, sorry, where it was like exploring all these different characters. And so there's more of that. And then you get into another pulse pounding. So it's kind of every other, but I like how that flows. Yeah, I agree. This is very a fast moving story, but I dig it. And I'm excited to see when we finally get those other characters. Now that we like know who they are,
yeah,
I'm excited to move there. Real quick, because I know we gotta wrap here. Are you afraid of Darkseid? Number one in the horror theme is an 80 page anthology book of a bunch of stories, which is why I didn't want to get hit by Kofi for signing. I do not sign the long ones. I try not to anyway. So here's the thing. I jumped on that grenade. And I gotta say though, I actually really liked it. There's like one story that's right in the middle and it slows everything to a crawl. And like I actually almost stopped like twice because like, oh my God, I'm so bored. But then after, like the before and the after are really, really good. And that story's good. It's just one of those like just loves to hear itself talk, and it's one of those. It's just like, oh my God. But after the before and after that, they're really good. And there's about five or six stories in there. So I was like worth it. If you're into the Halloween theme, it's essentially the Teen Titans telling spooky stories around a campfire, but they're all encompassing. Like the stories are about the whole DC universe. So definitely check it out. That's comics.
All right. Thank you, Matt. That's going to do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. You're just going to do a quick mention that, yes, we talked about Midnight Mass and we didn't get into it, but that's on Netflix. Mike Flanagan, excellent horror director. So if you need something to watch, go check that out. We also got news about the new Dragon Ball superhero movie that is coming out during New York Comic Con, which is happening right now. So please check out comicbook.com anime for that as well. Guys, did you have anything you wanted to quick mention before we get out of here?
Janelle?
I'm just excited to be here. These books are so good and I'm loving it. I'm just
moving on. Matt, it's you have awesome. Anything to mention.
Thanks for listening.
I love you, Janelle. Yeah, so Muppets Haunted Mansion is out on Disney Plus.
What?
I really enjoyed it. That's super fun. And you can also later today on comicbook.com check out interviews with Gonzo and Pepe.
Piggy,
which I cannot say I am not thrilled about. That's amazing. Also, we have some Power Rangers interviews coming up on the site. We have a really cool interview with Keanu Reeves and the team behind Berserker coming up, hopefully in the next week or two. And then NXT Halloween Havoc is right around the corner. So we'll have plenty of wrestling stuff to preview as well.
If you are just joining us, this is Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. You can download audio on all your favorite podcast platforms. You can watch us on Facebook, Twitch or YouTube live when we stream every new episode Friday at noon. But if you miss it, you can also catch us on Paramount Plus on Saturday nights starting this week. And that's really exciting. So thank you for everybody new who's joining us. And for all our regular fans, we'll see you guys next week. This is Comic Book Nation. Peace.
Deuces. Bye, guys.